First, our sponsor this half hour is Real Estate Agents I Trust. We want to. Real Estate Agents I Trust was developed by me and my wife and my brother as a side business, really, that was not really a business. It was just, can we just connect people to great real estate agents? Because I've done work with real estate agents, some of the best real estate agents, according to the Wall Street Journal, all around the country for years. And I wanted to put the ones that have the same values that you have together with you. Sell your house fast and for the most amount of money with realestateagentsitrust.com. Go there now. realestateagentsitrust.com.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
The Virginia abortion bill failed, but that's only because one of the co-sponsors said, I have to admit, I'm new here and I trusted people and I didn't read the bill. And I don't want anything to do with this bill. It goes way too far. I'll give you the update on that and what our responsibility is now. Also, Ben Sasse will be joining us today, and Pat Gray joins me as we begin the show in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
We've cleared all of the commercials out of this first half hour, those long commercial breaks, and we only stopped for 1 minute twice this time. And here's the first one, and it's our sponsor, FilterBuy. Getting sick has nothing to do with putting a hat on. You know, our mothers used to say, put a hat on, you're going to get sick. That's not why we get sick. We actually get sick because we spend too much time inside, Mom. In the winter, we spend so much time inside, and the air, it's like living inside of an airplane for months. Of course you're going to get sick. The air is sick itself. It's not getting any fresh air. That's why we get sick, and the best thing you can do is change your filters. Do it now. FilterBuy.com. They're going to help you do it. You're going to save money. You'll also save an extra 5% if you ask them to make it even more convenient for you. It's amazing to me that you'll save 5% if you sign up for automatic delivery. What that means is you don't ever have to think about it again. It'll just arrive at your doorstep and you'll say, oh, crap, already? Time to change the filter. And you go up, change the filter, throw the old one away, and you're done. Never think about it again. FilterBuy.com. For a healthier winter, it's FilterBuy.com. There's a great article today at glennbeck.com written. Well, I want you just to listen to it. It was written by a friend of mine who you may know. And I didn't know his story until he wrote to me. And he said, Glenn, I'm sick to my stomach today. There are moments of clarity in all of our lives, and hopefully you experience such a thing more than just once. But on Wednesday afternoon, on my drive home in Raleigh, North Carolina, I was listening to a recap of the week's news on the radio. What I heard was that a lawmaker in Virginia had brought forward a bill to expand abortion access and remove restrictions on the procedure currently in place in the state. The reporter said, you'd expect this sort of legislation in New York or California, but it seems out of character for the state of Virginia. My fingers slowly tightened around the steering wheel. Audio played of Kathy Tran, a delegate from Fairfax County, explaining the substance of the Repeal Act to her colleagues on the floor. I don't know about this moment or this bill, and I don't know why it drew out such a strong reaction from me. After all, the state of New York just passed a very similar measure only a week ago, and I went on with my day. But this afternoon, my vision blurred and my stomach tightened. Something was wrong, and I could feel the most subtle shockwaves going up my arms to my neck, discomfort and rapid breathing. I got through the next stoplight and I pulled the car over. I turned it off and I just sat there for a few minutes, focusing on my breath. I've never experienced this. I think this was a moment of clarity, the realization of a lie. If you're hearing this, you need to know the backstory. Governor Ralph Northam recently joined WTOP radio in Washington, D.C., and was asked about the abortion bill dubbed the Repeal Act, which had been causing a stir in the state for a better part of a week. But one of his answers was, quote, "If a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and family desired. Then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother on what to do." The bill, sponsored by Delegate Kathy Tran of Fairfax County, would allow women to get abortions up until the point of birth if their physical or mental health are considered at risk. To put a fine point on it, Tran was questioned about her bill earlier this week and expressed that it offered no limits on when the abortion could be carried out, including when the mother is dilated and about to give birth. It reduces the number of doctors required to approve termination from 3 to 1, and it lowers the bar significantly for the severity of the health risk. Now, we are talking about the impairment of mental health in addition to the mother's physical health. What does that even mean? Well, making things vague is the point. Something I didn't see coming in the abortion debate, but I'm guessing pro-lifers probably saw it a million miles back. Was that where this was headed the whole time? The first time I had the slightest idea, the slightest thought that the case for abortion might expand to having virtually no boundaries was when the discourse on college campuses began to blend mental and physical harm into a single thing. "When is speech violence?" was a New York Times article in 2017, and it was actually my first hint. The piece described the science behind the stress and how challenges to the nervous system in the form of hurtful or abusive speech can cause long-lasting physical harm. And I remember thinking to myself about that talking point in cases of physical harm to the mother, but I moved on with my day. On the question of abortion, I have failed the test each time that I can think of for a litany of reasons that all boil down to cowardice. I believe in God. I believe God tests us daily in our lives. On the question of abortion, I have failed the test. My wife and I are both proud parents of an 8-year-old girl. She's the light of our lives and brilliant. And I will likely never forgive myself on how I reacted when my then college girlfriend, now wife, came to me and told me she was pregnant. I was a 20-year-old pro-life Republican fair-weather Christian, and she was my liberal girlfriend who didn't see the world on my way on just about anything. My thought process was then, well, obviously she'll handle it and this will go away. So, with my head down, I asked her if that was her plan. It was most definitely not. The idea quite offended her, and she walked out. I failed the biggest test of my young life. I like to think I made it right by later stepping up and forming the family that I now have and cherish. It took a lot of work on both of our parts, but after that, my view on abortion changed to match my previous failure. I decided that I was pro-choice, because how could I champion the right to life when I turned away from it in the moment of my being tested? This new view shielded me from another layer of shame, that of hypocrisy. Gradually, other pressing issues led me away from being conservative to being libertarian, an identification I still hold on to and believe to be correct. Abortion is still very much in debate in libertarian circles, as it has been for quite some time, whereas it's settled for conservatives and progressives. I found comfort in the hand-wringing and uncertainty of the libertarian viewpoint. In order to detach myself from the outcome of America's abortion debate, I had to assume three things. First, that they were sincere in the argument that the survival of the mother was of utmost concern to the pro-choice crowd. Second, that the valid debate over when life begins wouldn't be allowed by courts to extend past the time of birth. Third, that while late-term abortions are generally rare and unpopular, the legality of the practice was not going to extend beyond the most progressive corners of America. The quick rise and fall of the Repeal Act in Virginia unravels all of these things. I taught myself to believe about the abortion debate, that it had boundaries, that it was about people trying to defend life in exceptional circumstances, both on the side of advocacy for the unborn and the women carrying them. But it's simply not true. And this week, I saw it. The radicalized left in 2019, supported by a new wave of true believers who consider physical and mental harm to be entirely subjective concepts, is not going to stop expanding the religion of choice. Governor Northam made it clear in his admission that the fates of children could be decided on after the fact of their birth. This wasn't a slip-up or miscommunication. It was the mask coming off an ideology of death that had now been mainstreamed. I just didn't have the courage and clarity to confront it. Sitting on the side of the road with the keys in my ignition, I wondered if this is what being convicted by God actually feels like. I have prayed for countless years for the Spirit to move me in a way it moves some members of my family, when all I've ever felt is silence in my faith. Now you might say I just had a panic attack. I would say it was given to me, and I thank God for giving it to me. Kathy Tran and Governor Northam revealed the sidelines are no longer the place where I belong. My hope for moderation and wisdom from public officials has not stopped the worst ideas on abortion from being realized and spread. Eventually, more state legislatures will be faced with similar bills that blur the lines of what defines harm. David French wrote in the National Review that the onset of anxiety, depression, the fear of postpartum will soon be tried as reasons for young life to be terminated. He's right. I started my engine and I decided I am now joining the movement to defend the sanctity of life. If you've ever been on the sidelines on this, I hope you'll now join me. Never more than 60 seconds away from the show. You can find that article at glennbeck.com. Let me tell you about 1-800-FLOWERS and then right back to the show. Relationship number one. Relationship tip number one. It's Valentine's Day. And unless you realize that is kind of important for reasons a man will never understand, don't fall for the, oh, we don't have to celebrate Valentine's Day this year, honey. It's, as the fish-faced man said in Star Wars, it's a trap. It's absolutely a trap. This season, the biggest and best quality roses are only found at 1-800-flowers.com. Right now, you can get a dozen assorted roses for $19.99 or upgrade to 2 dozen roses for $10 more. Great offer. Only from 1-800-Flowers.com, but the offer expires today. Roses from 1-800-Flowers picked at their peak, and they're shipped overnight, so yours are not going to be picked until the week of Valentine's Day, and that ensures their freshness. So why walk on the beach and talk to your mom about freshness when 1-800-Flowers.com is here? A dozen assorted roses, $19.99, or 2 dozen for $10 more. It expires today. Get it now at 1-800-Flowers.com. Make sure you use the radio code Beck. It's 1-800-Flowers.com. Radio code Beck. We pause now for 10 seconds. Station ID. G geez, I hope I didn't realize. I thought it was next hour. I hope I haven't made the senator wait too long. Ben Sasse is on the phone with us now. Senator, how are you, sir? Is he there? Hey, now a technical problem. This is not going well. Senator,
hey, he's just a U.S. senator.
Just
though.
A U.S.
That's
senator.
That's the good thing.
No big deal. Thing. No,
not
big
a problem.
Deal. Senator, are you there, sir?
I am.
Okay.
I've enjoyed the last segment and your ad, so I'm happy to sit here on wait for a while.
Okay, I am just so sorry to make you wait.
No worries.
So I have to commend you for the way you have handled this. Can we please play the quick quote from Ben Sasse that came out yesterday, please?
Let's be really clear about what we're talking about here. We're talking about fourth trimester abortion, or what anyone in the normal world calls infanticide. That's what we're talking about. And the governor of Virginia has been defending this all day yesterday and again today, going out and trying to equivocate and qualify and then double down and again say he wants to defend this practice, which is infanticide. Everyone in the Senate ought to be able to say unequivocally that killing that little baby is wrong. This doesn't take any political courage. And if you can't say that, if there's a member of this body that can't say that, there may be lots of work you can do in the world, but you shouldn't be here. You should get the heck out of any calling in public life where you pretend to care about the most vulnerable among us.
I was reading last night about colonial America and abortions, and you sound like Lord Baltimore. He said that very thing about somebody who was in government who was involved in an abortion, and he said, get out, you have no place in public service. Thank you for that. Can you tell me what has happened to us? What is going on with these abortion bills?
I honestly don't know. I can't understand what is going on in Virginia, in New York. I guess there are some other states in New England looking at this crap.
Two others.
This is how far the radical pro-abortion lobby has driven this conversation. 15 years ago, 20 years ago, Bill Clinton's argument was, well, abortion's bad, but we can't make everything bad illegal. And so we need abortion. This is Bill Clinton talking. We need safe and legal, but we want it to be rare. Now they're talking about keeping a baby comfortable while doctors stand around and have a debate about infanticide. It is truly bizarre what Governor Northam is out there defending.
So I want to believe that this is some sort of game that the Democrats are playing to get their side worked up for the next election. They're going to turn it into the right is going to just try to take away all right to for women and women's bodies, or that they are just trying to move the Overton window and be so crazy that we're all like, OK, come on, first term, first trimester abortions. I mean, I think we all agree on that, but I don't think so. I think this is evil. I think some of these people who are at the top of the Democratic Party really do believe what Peter Singer teaches. And that is, you have a right until this child really sees and recognizes that there is a tomorrow. You have a right to kill it.
Yeah, I'm one of eight people, I think, in the Senate who's never been a politician before. So I'm not going to pretend I'm any good political prognosticator. I don't know where all these motives come from, but I know this. I know that the pro-life movement is going to win eventually because it's on the side of
science.
Human dignity. It's on the side of science. Mm-hmm. It's on the side of love. And there's all sorts of legislative stuff we need to do. I'm the lead sponsor in the Senate for the last 3 years of the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act. We're going to try to move some expedited floor consideration of that on Monday. But the most important thing we can do in this movement is continue talking with our friends and our family and women who are going through unbelievably hard circumstances often, and keep telling the truth in love, because these are babies. And it's really not that complicated to celebrate human dignity and to talk about these babies. And we've got Governor Northam out there just cowardly ducking again and again, you know, unwilling to say that it's wrong to leave a newborn baby to die cold and alone.
Senator, this is the first time I've seen politics go like this, where this is not, it doesn't feel like this is a campaign kind of thing. This feels like a turning point in American history, and I'm a little shocked that more people aren't up in arms about this and aren't standing up, even from the Democratic side, because I don't think the Democratic voter, the voters in Nebraska that vote for Democrats, they don't believe this stuff. But they're being told, if you, and you'll see it online, the social media spin is, oh, that's not true. It's not like that in the bills. And that's not what this means. And it is in the bill.
It is. What we're talking about here should be so far beyond Republican and Democratic politics. We're talking about the fact that if you can't say it's wrong to leave a baby to die when that baby survived an abortion, you have no place in public life. This is not complicated. And frankly, now that the Democratic Party's some of their leaders, not all of them, but some of their leaders have started to do this, I think every single Democrat in America should have to answer whether or not they're with those little baby girls or whether they're with Governor Cuomo and Governor Northam.
It frightens me, knowing history, that even the Germans, the people who voted for Hitler, when they found out infanticide was happening, they stood up against the T4 program. Then it just was hidden. But they forced Hitler to say, oh, you're right, we wouldn't do that, we shouldn't do that. I mean, those people, they were crazy, and they stood up against it. And we seem to be kind of quiet about it.
Yeah, I don't think, though, that even Planned Parenthood's PR army and a national media that's decidedly pro-abortion, I don't think that even that grouping is going to be able to duck the fact that what we're talking about here is infanticide.
I hope
so. When you hear Northam's comments on that radio show yesterday, where he says, oh, you know, people should know that I'm sure that the baby will be kept warm and comfortable for a little bit.
Oh, my gosh, until we kill it.
We have the debate about infanticide.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, Senator, I've got a break. If you have to go, I understand. And if you can hold on, I'd like to continue a conversation with you. But thank you, thank you, thank you for being a voice of reason and once again standing up and saying the right things.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
All right, I want to talk to you about X Chair. You can get the, well, Pat, you have a crappy chair in your studio.
yes, I do.
Yes, you do. How do you like this one?
Much better.
Yeah, much
this
better.
This is awesome.
We should get you an X chair. I mean, you have a bad back.
Then again,
you know, they're not that expensive. You could get an X chair.
Yes. You know, I'm considering it.
Yes. An X chair. The office chairs are not all the same. And I don't know if you've ever sat back in this, but lean back all the way. I think this is as comfortable. Well, maybe Stu doesn't have it, so you can lean all the way back.
He doesn't have it like yours.
Oh, yeah, man.
I need that adjustment because that's nice.
It is as comfortable as like a recliner. Mm. X-Chair and X-Chair Basic. It is affordable and the greatest chair. Get one now, save $100, and get a free footrest if you use the promo code Beck, 844-4X-Chair or xchairbeck.com. Join us for another Blaze TV live event this Tuesday as we cover the State of the Union address. I will be in Washington with the rest of the crew, 7:30 Eastern, Facebook, YouTube, Blaze TV.
iPatriots.us is a new conservative alternative to liberal-based email services. It's secure, private, and safe, no ads or spam, and they won't collect or sell your data ever. Go to iPatriots.us right now, pick your membership. At checkout, select your own iPatriots email address, enter promo code Patriot, get the first month free. Go month to month, cancel anytime.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. On Monday, I'm going to be doing a special show on abortion and these laws that are being passed and what they mean. And I'm doing it to prepare you to be able to go out with your friends and have these conversations. I hear people saying, that's not true. That's not what's in the bill. I also hear people saying, I wish I had this fact or that fact. I can't ever remember the stats. Oh, I wish you were there when I was having this conversation with my friend. I'm going to make it very easy for you on Monday to be able to pretty much have the resources that I have at your disposal at any time on this issue. We have entered a new era We have entered a very dark period, and I believe the beginning of the time where I have said, if we go dark, we will be worse than the Nazis. We will make the Nazis look like rookies. And the reason why I say that is because we have technology. It was barbaric to try to change somebody's eyes to blue, but now it's not so barbaric because we can gene splice. But it wasn't just the idea of, well, they had to inject ink into eyes. It was that you don't want to create a super race. What are we doing? And now we're talking about euthanasia on one end and infanticide on the other end. And we're going to a single payer healthcare system. It is in the cards, gang. We're going that direction. And if that happens, you have nothing to rely on except the state. And when the state is misbehaving, where do you go? Who do you call? Who's going to stop the state from doing things? I want to show you and bring Pat into the conversation. Pat, we have been together for 30 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you seen anything this disturbing ever?
I don't think so. We used to remember when we found bioethicist Peter Singer from Princeton.
Yes.
And the things he said, like it'd be okay to put children down, to kill them up until
2 years old.
Like 2 years old.
But then he apologized. Do you remember that?
Yeah, he did.
He apologized. And he said
it wasn't far enough.
Yes. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have put the 2 year age limit
on. That's ridiculous.
It's crazy. And we thought, okay, this guy is out of his mind. He's crazy, or he's just trying to make a point and get people to think. But I think he's crazy.
And now you've got governors of states agreeing with him, essentially, by saying you can kill a baby after it's born. Did you ever think we'd get there? I didn't ever
think
we'd get
there. You want to talk about trigger language. Ugh. You want to talk about ideas that can trigger people. What about this? Is this not traumatizing? Now, I say we have this debate. We have to. But if you go by their rules, this is traumatizing to even suggest that women have the right to kill their newborn baby. But it's not traumatizing to the left. And I'm not talking about the Democrats in the middle of the country. I do not believe that they are for this. In fact, almost every poll taken shows that only the most hardcore of hardcore believe this. 15% of the pro-choice people, okay? So
if 25% of pro-choice, 15%
overall.
You're right.
25% of the pro-choice people. Overall, 15% of the choice to pro-choice. So that is not anywhere close to the majority of people. Now, maybe the people in your neighborhood do believe in infanticide. I don't think they do, no matter who they vote for. But this isn't disturbing to the uber left. And let me give you a couple of examples. First, let me go to the extremes, the Bernadine Dorn and the Bill Ayers of the world. Do you remember this audio from the FBI agent that had infiltrated the Weather Underground? Listen.
I brought up the subject of what's going to happen after we take over the government. We become responsible then for administrating, 250 million people. And there was no answers. No one had given any thought to economics. How are you going to clothe and feed these people? The only thing that I could get was that they expected that the Cubans and the North Vietnamese and the Chinese and the Russians would all want to occupy different portions of the United States. They also believed that their immediate responsibility would be to protect against what they called the counter-revolution. And they felt that this counter-revolution could best be guarded against by creating and establishing re-education centers in the Southwest, where we would take all the people who needed to be re-educated into the new way of thinking and teach them how things were going to be. I ask, well, what is going to happen to those people that we can't re-educate, that are die-hard capitalists? And the reply was that they'd have to be eliminated. And when I pursued this further, they estimated that they would have to eliminate 25 million people in these re-education centers. And when I say eliminate, I mean kill 25 million people.
So this has been a part of the Uber left's philosophy for a long time. This is what communists do, quite honestly. And you're seeing now the mask come off and people claiming they're socialists, but they're really not socialists. They're not Swedish socialists, because that's not a socialist country. Venezuela is a socialist country. Sweden is a capitalist country with a gigantic welfare state. And while that flirts with socialism, that is a capitalist country with a welfare state attached to it. That's us. Socialists always have to go down the road of seizing assets, taking things that aren't theirs, and paying for these things. And when that money runs out, well, what are you going to do? You have to start eliminating people. You have to start eliminating those who are fighting against you, because the state is supreme. Remember, it was the Barack Obama science czar, John Holdren, who also in the 1970s, when it was okay to think like this, said we should put sterilants in the drinking water of the United States. And it was okay. Why was it okay? Well, if you believe that man is a virus, if you believe that man is responsible for global warming, if you believe that the earth just cannot handle this many people, it's your moral and responsible thing to do to kill people, to save the collective, so the individual no longer matters. And if you think that it might just be tolerable to just the crazies, here's the guy that everybody says would win against Donald Trump, talking about China, Joe
Your
Biden.
Your policy has been one, which I fully understand, I'm not second guessing, of one child per family.
Oh.
The result being that you're in a position where one wage earner will be taking care of four retired people.
So he's not, he understands the one child policy. Well, what, why does he understand that? Well, because their population is too big and it's unsustainable. So what does the one child policy mean? Well, you have to indoctrinate people to believe that they have a right to only one child. And if they do have a second child, the state can come in, and story after story proves it to be true, that they can come in and take that child and drown it in the front of the house in a rice paddy and move on. Because life has no meaning.
It also includes forced abortions and sterilization of the people.
Sure does. And what happens to the people? They go so dead inside. Do you remember the video of the truck that hit a child and killed the child in the streets of China? And it was captured by a video camera up on a building.
Mm-hmm.
And people just walked by the dead body.
Yeah.
The kid was
so desensitized
to life and death that it meant nothing. This is how you get there.
All these warnings over the years, the talk about Nazi Germany, it was never that we are currently Nazi Germany. It is, hey, this, you know, Germany started somewhere too. Germany started with policies that at first people thought, nah, that's not going to happen. And then they'd be enacted. And then they went to the next step and then the next step. And before long, they were these evil leaders and completely out of control, and it was too late for anybody to do anything about it.
And the people were in denial.
Yeah.
The people, think about what we're doing here, gang. We are being asked to deny the truth of what we see. Okay. We saw last week those Covington students. We saw them. We saw the video. We know what the truth is. But the mainstream media decided that that is not the truth. And they're asking us to not believe our eyes. And it's happening on both sides of the aisle, quite frankly. There are times that both sides of the aisle will ask their crew, just deny what you think, what you see, what you know, deny it. Well, that leads you eventually to be a group of people that see ashes come down like snow and no one says a word about it because you have to deny what you see. You get to a point to where the Germans were denying what they knew to be true based on what they could smell and what was falling on them from the sky. They were still in denial.
It's the normalcy bias.
Yes.
They want to believe things are normal.
Yes.
Nobody wants to believe their society is completely out of control and uncivilized. Nobody wants to believe that. So they chose not to.
It is why I have been saying you have to have courage of conviction. You have to stand now because it's not going to get easier than it is right now. If you're afraid right now, I'll lose my position at work. I will lose my friends, those in the media. I will lose my audience because I'm not saying the things my audience wants to hear. It's not going to get easier. It's going to get harder. And you must stand for the truth. Otherwise, boy, these sayings from the past that we have quoted so often are taking on new meaning now. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, silence in the face of evil is evil itself. Not to stand is to stand. Not to speak is to speak. We empower. Pat and I have asked for forgiveness because for so many years we didn't speak up because we just couldn't take on any more hits. We're not going to take that on too. What a mistake that was. To our eternal shame, what a mistake that was. It's past time. There will not be any sidelines. Whether you speak or risk today or not, it will put you in the stands. And only standing and speaking with courage today will put you on the right side of the field. I'd like to invite you to take a risk-free trial on an investment course that we've had former Wall Street hedge fund manager Tika Tiwari create just for you. It's an education course, and it's designed to help people starting out with a very small amount of money, hopefully grow it into a much larger pile of money. And while Bitcoin, isn't where we thought or hoped it would be at the start of this year, signs are positive that it should be going up this year. In fact, they're more than positive. It is just, it's public sentiment. It's not based in reality. A lot like the Wall Street, except in reverse. Now, this new course is not right for everybody, but it is for every man or woman who has ever felt lied to and cheated by the financial establishment. It's for anybody who lost 30% more of their retirement in the 08 crash, or those who have totaled up their savings and investments and come to the terrifying realization you're not going to quit your job until you die. It's for those of us who are really ready to take the small risk right now on something new for a chance of amazing results. But I urge you to educate yourself before you do anything. Educate yourself. Go to smartcryptocourse.com. That's smartcryptocourse.com. Or call 877-PBL-BECK. That's 1-877-PBL-BECK. Smartcryptocourse.com. On Monday, you don't want to miss our program dedicated to the truth about abortion and those that are pushing it, and this new cliff that we've just gone over. Let me just play a little bit of the chair of ethics at Princeton University, Peter Singer.
on... I said it's speciesist. I mean, it's limited to human beings. It says that biologically being a member of the species Homo sapiens is enough to make your life more sacred, more entitled to protection than the life of, for example, a chimpanzee who is not a member of our species, who is far more self-aware, far more rational, far more capable of emotionally connecting with other beings, with loving her child, let's say, if it's a female chimpanzee, than a human being with Anencephaly, the condition we were talking about, could ever be. That seems to me just a mere prejudice in favor of members of our species.
Wow. Okay, so I think he's both right and wrong. You know, they're more rational. Well, they also throw their poop at things. but the other thing is they may be more compassionate because they don't kill the unborn and their newborn babies.
Yeah.
So he may be right
about
that.
Not the point he was making.
No, but no.
Still.
Every day we ask you, hey, buy something from, you know, this advertiser or that. We do because we have vetted these advertisers and we know that they have a product that could be of use to you. I choose to partner with certain companies and certain products because they are people that share the same belief as well. And they go beyond. Ask yourself why you buy from certain companies and don't buy from others. I stopped a transaction halfway through at Dick's because I remembered, oh, crap, you're Dick's. I was just looking at you at a sporting goods store. No, I'm not going to do business with you. The same could be said with your phone service. Please switch to PatriotMobile.com. You're going to get great cell service. Great cell service. Same coverage. But you're not going to have that company giving all that money to Planned Parenthood and undo everything you believe in. PatriotMobile.com/Blaze. Go there now. Your activation fee is waived and it's great service. Right now, 1-800-A-PATRIOT or PatriotMobile.com/Blaze.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, if you're a longtime listener of the program, you know that it is Super Bowl. It is the big game weekend. And that means that Stu is gone today and Monday because he goes every single year. So how do I approach the big game weekend without somebody who really knows it? Don't worry about it. We have it covered. Andrew Heaton joins me about the big game in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
And you're good on football, right, Andrew?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
I've got a whole list of things.
Because I'm not.
Yeah.
Because I'm not good at football. You know that? And you're good?
I don't know anything about it, but I've got suggestions on how to fix it. I know the two teams playing. That's it.
Oh, well, so you're better than I am. A security breach occurs when an intruder gains unauthorized access to an organization's protected system or data, right? That's what a security breach is. Security breaches are happening now all the time. And we used to just have to worry about banks and things like that. Now it's data banks. It's your phone. It's your iPad. It's your computer. Anything that has personal information, they can get it now. It's really disruptive. And there are countries that are trying to do it to the average American, not just countries trying to hack into Citibank. They're hacking into your stuff. LifeLock.com, promo code Beck. This is the way to stop it. Nobody can protect you from all of the bad stuff that's out there, but these guys are absolutely the best. Use the promo code Beck at LifeLock.com or 1-800-LIFELOCK. You're going to get 10% off the service, which will alert you, will monitor, and if there is a problem, they have somebody based here in the U.S. that is a specialist that's going to work hand in hand with you to get it fixed. LifeLock.com. Use the promo code Beck. Save 10% now. 1-800-LIFELOCK or LifeLock.com. Promo code Beck. You know, I've heard from people because they don't, you know, I don't listen to sports radio, but I've heard from people that they absolutely hate it when sports radio starts talking about politics because they know nothing about it and they're idiots. So we have always made it our policy to stick to the things we know. For instance, science, deep science, mathematics, things like that. And, of course, on the big game weekend, we do talk a little bit about sports, because while I don't have real knowledge of sports, we are surrounded by people who really know it inside and out. And Andrew Heaton is not one of those people, but welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Good to be here. You know what?
Sure.
I think it's kind of like, I assume that my friends who are parents enjoy hearing about my theories on parenting because I don't have any kids, and
well,
that's,
you know,
a fresh perspective.
I will tell you this. Sometimes it's the people who aren't involved at all,
mm-hmm,
that have the clearest look at it.
Thank you. I agree. And that's
right.
Why I spent this morning coming up with awesome ways to improve American football for the big game. Can I lay a couple of these on you?
Sure.
All right. So I think everyone can get behind this.
Okay.
No more referees. Only very judicious cheerleaders. I think that is, first of all, that's giving props to the cheerleaders. And second, win for everybody. I like the cheerleaders.
So wait, but they're on a team.
You'd have impartial cheerleaders from Canada. You'd have cheerleaders who understand the game but aren't on either team playing. So you've got like a third team of cheerleaders. They're now the refs. They would wear uniforms that are black and white.
But I think that they, in Canada, play a different kind of football.
That's possible. I'm going to have to look into that.
All
I just
right.
assume
okay.
everybody's
well,
playing with an egg-shaped ball.
Let's move on.
So that's one of them. All right. So this next one. I think sports, a lot of it is sublimated warfare. It's that kind of like, we're going to go fight the other team
sure.
impulse, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think football in particular, because it's about kind of staging your troops. It's,
mm-hmm.
it's sort of like Napoleonic warfare, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So from now on, each mm-hmm. team gets a horse. Everybody gets one cavalry unit. I think that would fundamentally alter the game.
So only one horse.
One horse.
You don't have a line of horses.
Anything more than that would be excessive and ridiculous.
Right.
One horse, that's the sane choice. Just
All right.
one horse per team.
If I remember right, I think there was an old Disney movie, like, I don't know, The Nutty Professor or something like that. Maybe it had been Son of Flubber, where they had a horse with a helmet on. I know I saw... Maybe I made this up in my head.
And they've got earbuds, so animals are pretty good at football. That's
yeah.
what I've learned from Disney.
Now, yeah. they wouldn't be catching.
No. I think that it would be someone... I mean, I'm not entirely sure what the strategy would be. I mean, that would be more of a Tom Brady call. But, you know, presumably, if you're like the wind back or whatever,
yeah.
and it's your job to get the ball from the other guy,
sure.
Then, like, you know, you could. I'd rather have a horse.
And Tom Brady is the coach, right?
He's the quarterback.
He's the quarterback.
However,
okay.
how would you know? Because, you know, there's no costuming that identifies him. Like, if you're in the Navy, you're like, oh, that guy's a captain. Look, he's got those epaulets and things. Now, it doesn't happen with football, which is why I think that the quarterback should have to wear a cape.
Okay. All right. Because the team members may not know who the quarterback is, because I know a lot of people in the stands won't know which one
exactly.
is the quarterback.
I can't tell. They all look the same to me.
Right.
That's
but
not a racial thing. That's a football thing.
Right, but maybe it's just for the fans, or is it for...
Well,
is the cape to identify, hey, which one of my friends is the quarterback, or is the cape for the fans that aren't there at practice all the time?
That's a very good question. You know, I think any team that's worth its salt's probably doing a lot of trust building exercises.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, chances are you're going to recognize the quarterback.
Right.
If I were the coach, I'd be doing that sufficiently. It's, I think, for the fans, so they can identify them. Because otherwise, how would you know where the quarterback is?
And they don't, you know, they don't tackle. It's always a big deal when they tackle the quarterback.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's because the other team is confused. Which one of you guys?
That's entirely possible.
Because
at that point, you're just going off of hand signals.
Right. So it might make it a little faster.
Yeah. Well, and that's another thing, too.
And Tom Brady probably wouldn't last as long
mm-hmm.
because he would have been tackled a lot more.
And this is a real fundamental thing. No more timeouts. None of that. If you watch rugby, they're like, we're going to do it from 6 to 8. And it's just 2 hours of continuous play. They get like one timeout each. No more timeouts in football. You don't get to do that anymore unless there's some sort of issue involving horse rights. Like, I could see the SPCA getting involved.
Or if somebody's trampled by a horse.
Yeah, but, you know, we don't take timeout during war. So
yeah, but this isn't real war.
That's true. It's not real
war.
Yeah, okay, fine. If someone gets kicked in the head by a horse, you get a horse break of
okay.
like 8 minutes to deal with it.
Do you get a penalty if someone is if the horse is just, if you, because you know you can't walk behind a horse,
right? Don't do that.
So you would never have the horse be the person that goes down with a football and throws the football between his back legs.
Yeah, no, that's yeah, for safety reasons you'd want to avoid that. Plus, it would be on your team, right?
Right.
So you wouldn't have no incentive to do it,
right? Because the quarterback would get kicked in the head.
Yeah, I think the bigger issue is probably horse steroids. You just want to make sure that horse is clean.
Sure.
You don't want to have any performance.
Otherwise, a regular
drugs.
Horse, a thoroughbred, could look like a Clydesdale.
Right. Exactly.
And but yeah. No.
You don't want an Appaloosa coming right. off like a Clydesdale.
Right.
You want it to be okay. So another thing, because again, I think this is sublimated warfare. You could have a third team just watch the game. So like this coming up big game, it's the Falcons and the Patriots, right?
Mm-hmm.
But let's say you're the Texas Rangers. Now, I'm aware that the Texas Rangers are a baseball team. That's fine. They can come to the game, sit in the stands, and then just charge the field and try and take the ball.
Got another idea.
Now, they
got
to bring a horse, but if they can do it, they win the game.
Okay, hang on. I got another idea. Have you ever played Chinese checkers?
Yeah.
Okay. Take a football field, okay, left and right, 100 yards.
Okay.
Now, put another football field and put it in the center.
Whoa.
So now you are playing two games.
Nice.
With one ball.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you've got them facing off. Everybody's trying to get that ball, and you can run it in four different directions.
Ooh, I like this. You could totally do that too. If you had like really thick plexiglass that was transparent, still fun for fans to watch. Because now you could see like, well, you got Tom Brady and the foot soldiers up top, and you got the horse units down at the base level. And you could see what's going on. Maybe you'd have like a...
Oh, no, no, like I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about it's the same... No, you take a football field, and then on the same plane, you have another football field.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm just saying you should make the second one transparent so you can see through the first one.
No, you don't understand. This is not that complex.
Glenn, I'm sorry. I'm coming here with legitimate reform ideas, and
now I'm starting to question
You're getting into structural design.
I was buying into the cape and the costuming thing
because I
think like the Browns. I think it's the Browns. I'm not sure, but one of them wears costumes that are this really bad brown. It's like a poop brown and a lighter poop brown, and it's not good.
Yeah.
And I think those costumes are holding them back.
Yeah, I agree. I also think mascots should be armed. I think mascots should have some kind of deadly weapon. I want to clarify, I don't think we should relax any murder laws, still against the law to kill people, but you would know that the mascot has a loaded gun. And every once in a while, the camera would come in and you just see the mascot staring at Tom Brady. And you're like, I think that mascot's thinking about killing Tom Brady. And that adds a really interesting psychological dimension of the game.
And it might be better because we don't want to have, the NFL doesn't want any more trouble.
Yeah.
They've so stay away from guns, maybe like a giant mace.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah. That'd be neat. Yeah. I'd totally go for that. And that kind of fits with the cavalry thing more.
And you could, instead of the shoulder pads, why not just put them in armor?
I would, if Stu called me and he's like, hey, I got tickets to the big game. You want to come? I'd be like, will I be able to see the commercials from the stadium?
That's exactly how I would.
If not, I don't know. Yeah. But if Stu were like, hey, I'm going over to the football field. There's a bunch of guys in armor that are just going to wail on each other with maces. I'd be like, yeah, I'll go watch that. I'll watch a melee combat. Sure.
I've changed my mind because I've realized that what we've just created is the medieval times.
Yeah.
And I don't like that.
You got a birthday coming up. Can we go there for your birthday?
All right. Back in just a second. First, let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It is Simply Safe. No one should feel unsafe at home. Now, you're on a football field and the mascot's got a mace. That's a different thing. But fear has no place in anyone's home. And that is Simply Safe's mission from day one. They're running a commercial for, I can't even say, I hate this so much, the big game. Do you know why people are saying that on radio and television? The big game? You didn't know this until yesterday.
I had no idea until yesterday. Apparently, I'm not allowed to say it.
You can say the big game.
You
just can't say SB.
Can you say it backwards?
Sure.
So I could say the bowl El Super?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. You're right. Or
El Super. Sorry.
Yeah. El Super.
Nailed it.
All right. So we can't say that because it's an officially licensed product of the NFL. So it leaves us sounding like we're idiots calling it the big game. But anyway, they're going to be running a commercial on the big game. The only reason why that's interesting, at least to me, is because they started with us. that we were their first advertising, and they were like this company that was just had this crazy idea. And they were like, look, we've done this with our friends and it just caught on and we think we have a business. And I'm like, come on, I think this is great. Now they protect, I think it's like 3 million American homes right now. They're starting to go into other countries. It is the greatest success story. And the guy who started it, the guy who came up with the system, he always wanted to be like his grandfather. And his grandfather was a tinkerer. And I don't remember what it was, but he's the guy who invented one of the most important things in the modern tank during World War II.
Thank you.
He helped us win the Second World War. And nice. So he always wanted to be like his grandfather. And now he is, keeping Americans safe. Round-the-clock professional monitoring. Make sure that police are on the way or fire when you need them. And it's only $14.99 a month. You own this system. There's no wires. There's no games. It's SimplySafeBeck.com. SimplySafeBeck.com. Go there now. Get 10% off the system and free shipping. SimplySafeBeck.com. We break. 10 seconds. Station ID. Now, you know I'm against abortion, and most in this audience are against abortion, so I apologize for our Super Bowl coverage in the last 10 minutes. Monday, I want to remind you that I'm doing a show on abortion, because I think what I see in social media is the left is trying to convince you that these things aren't true. And people are saying the bill allows you to have an abortion, when the woman is having, when she's dilated and in delivery. That's not true. That's not in the bill. Yeah, it actually is. And so what I want to do on Monday is equip you with all of the facts, and we're going to put them on glenbeck.com so you have them. We'll highlight them. We'll give you the full text. We'll give you the argument back and forth with the people who sponsored the bill. And so you'll be able to hear all this, and you'll be able to share it. Don't share it with your friend and say, I got this from Glenn Beck, because then that just shoots it all to hell. We're going to give you the actual facts raw so you have them, so you can have a decent conversation with your friends who might be putting their heads in the sand. Now, Andrew is you were an abortion doctor for many years. No, he's a libertarian.
Yeah.
Who, you believe in murder.
Yes, I think yes. As long as you've got a good reason, I'm fine with it. Yeah,
yeah, right. Yeah. So you believe that, murdering children is wrong.
Yeah.
You're just kind of, I think, like most people, when it gets to when is life created,
I probably have a later start time.
Yeah. But and you're first trimester.
Yeah, something like, I mean, right. I don't have the exact date worked out in my head, but. Yeah. But and I think this is a subject which is always going to make me uncomfortable, because I doubt that I'm ever going to be 100% either direction, because in my mind, I'm very anti-murder. I'm particularly anti-murder when it comes to children, not killing children. At the same time, though, I don't think that it's a kid, day two after conception. And were I to force somebody to carry to term at that point, I almost view that like a form of slavery, which is libertarian. Kind of a fundamental precept is you own your body. Mm-hmm. You lose your rights once you're talking about someone else's body.
But once you, let's say, heartbeat, brain, there's a body in there, then that changes for you, because you're like, that's body.
Yeah, I don't know the exact threshold I'd put it here, but like I'd say third trimester abortion would very much bother me, because at that point I can look at that where for me where it's uncomfortable is there is some gray area for me, and I don't know how to do it.
So
I'm either trampling on someone's rights or I'm killing a kid.
I know.
But when you get into the third trimester, I'm like, at that point I don't really feel like it's up for debate anymore.
No.
That point you're killing a kid, and I'm against it.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I think that's where most people are, and they don't think about it, and they don't want to think about it, and they don't want to think about it for a few reasons.
It's an uncomfortable topic. Yeah.
It is an uncomfortable topic, and there is, for most people, there's a couple of hurdles that are hard to get over. For instance, rape and incest.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the judge. I don't want to be involved in that decision. You know what I mean? I don't want to, as an outsider, say no. Even though me personally, I believe it is murder. I don't. I am not to the point of, for instance, and this is going to hack off a lot of people possibly, but I am the day after pill. If it truly is the day after or the moment after, you're like, hey, you have that cigarette. I'm going to pop this pill. I'm not sure I classify that as abortion. And that's hard because I do believe in a soul and everything else. I'm just not sure. So it's a gray area.
Yeah.
But if that's what we were talking about as abortion, I would be so okay with it, or at least I could sleep at night somewhat. But where the direction we're heading, once that child, and this is a slippery slope, it used to be, well, once that child is viable, it's murder. Well, science is making it more viable earlier and earlier and earlier. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We're getting to a place to, in 10, 15 years, you will be able to just fertilize an egg and grow it in a sack. We're already there, being able to grow sheep in a sack. So it is actually viable. So
yeah, I mean, we'd have to, if for me, coming from a non-spiritual direction on it, I'd have to approach it more in terms of, is there an entity that is feeling and aware of pain? Does it have mental cognition of some form? Those are the kind of things. And that's, again, why I'm going to be so uncomfortable, because I don't think I can fully know. Where I've kind of gone back and forth is, I used to take a very cautious and conservative approach of, like, let's just...
err on the side of life.
Yeah, yeah. Where I've kind of swung back the other direction is, I was talking to somebody and they went, if the woman's life is under threat, would you be okay with it? And I went, yeah, if there's a chance of death. And they went, well, what if it's, you know, let's say 50%? Sure. What if it's 8%? Yeah. So from, like, just, this is such a weird way to approach it. I'm aware of that. From a regulatory standpoint, I feel like it's very difficult to allow medical exemptions, but at the same time,
see, this is where I am in a different place. I wrestle with, except for rape or incest. Well, why is murder okay?
Yeah,
I mean, if it's murder, that is recognizing that that child is a child and a separate life, and we protect individuals. So if it's murder, but it was created this way, it's not murder. No, that's really bad, because in today's world, we've never had to deal with this. We will be able to grow humans, clones, and take their parts and harvest them for organs. So if they're created, right now we say rape or incest, but if they're created in a lab and grown in a bag, wait, is that life? Is that life? Do we have that right to do it because it was created differently? I mean,
you know, part by part, I'm fine with it. If you just want to grow a leg or an arm or, you know, a heart, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, I think part by part, I'd be cool.
Yeah.
I'd be cool.
That I think what you've struck onto, and this is one of my things when we get into conversations about this, I appreciate consistency.
Yes.
So the position that I'm, yeah, I'll.
Yeah, we'll come back later, in a second. We've only got about 10 seconds, but I think I know where you're going, and I echo that. Consistency is really hard on this issue.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
If I'm wrong, eat, drink, and be merry. If I'm right, mortgages are going to be a little scarcer. Your mortgage interest rate is a major factor that will determine your monthly payment. And when rates are low, like they have been, that's when you need to get a loan and lock it in. Now, whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance an existing mortgage, you need to do it right now, because I think, like in 2008, if you remember, all of a sudden, no one could get a loan for anything. I think it's going to be difficult to get a loan for anything. The mortgage consultants at American Financing can get you qualified in 10 minutes and close in as fast as a week, and they work for you. So go to American Financing, family owned and operated. It's AmericanFinancing.net, AmericanFinancing.net. Don't forget, another Blaze TV live event is happening this Tuesday. We cover the State of the Union address, 7:30 Eastern, Facebook, YouTube, or blazetv.com/Beck. Earlier today, we had Ben Sasse on, the senator from Nebraska, and I just love him. He threw down the gauntlet yesterday. Here's what he said in Congress about these new abortion bills. Listen.
Let's be really clear about what we're talking about here. We're talking about fourth trimester abortion, or what anyone in the normal world calls infanticide. That's what we're talking about. And the governor of Virginia has been defending this all day yesterday and again today, going out and trying to equivocate and qualify and then double down and again say he wants to defend this practice, which is infanticide. Let's be clear what we're talking about. We're talking about killing a baby that's been born. We're not talking about some euphemism. We're not talking about a clump of cells. We're talking about a little baby girl who's been born and is on a table in a hospital or a medical facility. And then a decision or a debate would be had about whether or not you could kill that little baby. Everyone in the Senate ought to be able to say unequivocally that killing that little baby is wrong. This doesn't take any political courage. And if you can't say that, if there's a member of this body that can't say that, there may be lots of work you can do in the world, but you shouldn't be here. You should get the heck out of any calling in public life where you pretend to care about the most vulnerable among us.
So he is going on Monday. He's taking the floor, using Rule 14, whatever that is, to rush a bill to the floor of the Senate. And he is going to ask all 100 senators to stand up and declare that they are against infanticide. And he said that should be the easiest vote to ever go down. That once a child is born, we can't kill it.
Yeah. It seems like... I'm trying to, because I do try and, you know, like with the bill that came out of Virginia, I do make an effort to, okay, what's really happening here? What's the policy ins and outs? Is there something I haven't foreseen? But a general statement of infanticide's bad and we're against killing children post-birth? Is that, that seems like a...
Well, that's what the governor of a doctor, who is now the governor of Virginia, that's how he described what was in that bill. Hmm. He described that. Can we play that from a couple of days ago? And then I'd like to play his doubling down on it. This is what he said when he was on WTOP radio 2 days ago, asked about this bill. Hey, listen.
When we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. But again, we want the government not to be involved in these types of decisions. We want the decision to be made by the mothers and their providers. And this is why, Julie, that legislators, most of whom are men, by the way, shouldn't be telling a woman what she should and shouldn't be doing with her body.
So the baby is born, kept comfortable as they decide what to do with it. That's infanticide. Here is his doubling down the next day.
I'm a physician. I'm also the governor. But when I'm asked questions, a lot of times it is put in the context of being a physician. Again, realizing, you know, how we approach, how we manage patients, how we offer advice and counseling. So no, I don't have any regrets. But I do find, you know, that how my comments, I did answer that question. I regret that those comments have been mischaracterized. The personal insults toward me, I really find disgusting. So, again, as I said in my comments just earlier, You know, we can agree to disagree, Alan, but let's be civil about it.
Okay. I haven't heard anybody taking shots against him personally, and that, of course, would be wrong and just take us off track. There's no way to read what he said any differently. What he said literally was the baby would be born, resuscitated if that's what the family wanted, but then kept comfortable while we discussed what would happen. Notice also the absence of the father. It is only a discussion between the physician and the mother as he described it.
I mean, isn't that part kind of open-ended? Because in the clip you just played, he says that the baby would be resuscitated. He said that it would be resuscitated if that's what the mother wanted. But that still seems reasonably germane because we have that conversation about resuscitation with adults, too, and you could have a non-resuscitation order. But then he says a discussion ensues. I didn't get from that he necessarily said a discussion about terminating the child. I mean, he just said a discussion ensues. So maybe they're going to talk about...
Yeah, no, he said the baby would be kept comfortable while a discussion... Play it again, please. The TOP.
When we talk about third trimester abortions, these are done with the consent of obviously the mother, with the consent of the physicians, more than one physician, by the way. And it's done in cases where there may be severe deformities, there may be a fetus that's non-viable. So in this particular example, if a mother is in labor, I can tell you exactly what would happen. The infant would be delivered. The infant would be kept comfortable. The infant would be resuscitated if that's what the mother and the family desired. And then a discussion would ensue between the physicians and the mother. So I think this was really blown out of proportion. But again, we want the government.
I mean, a discussion of what?
I don't know. Yeah, but I just, you know, I tend to I try and be as charitable as I can about ambiguous statements, which is why if he came out and said if a child has deformities, we will discuss whether or not to terminate the child. That I would go, that's a pretty big alarm there. But I'm trying to give wide berth of if he said, say, you know, maybe the child is going to have multiple, they're going to have to resuscitate it multiple times. We're going to have a discussion about whether to do that or something like that. I feel like that's a different categorical discussion than, you know, infanticide.
Boy, I wish I could agree with you on that, because that's usually I try to, and this audience knows, I try to give people the benefit of the doubt until they don't deserve it anymore.
Sure.
And seeing that we are a society that has heard for so long safe, legal, and rare, and now it is all the way to birth, and that's in writing. Can you please play the Virginia conversation in the House in Virginia as they were going back and forth with the co-sponsor of this bill? This is a few days ago, before the governor, where someone in the House is trying to get nailed down. What does this mean exactly? Is there a cutoff? Go ahead.
How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
Or physical health.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm talking about the mental health.
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay, but to the end of the third trimester?
Yep, I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
Where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman.
I understand
that.
I'm asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that. Yes.
So the co-sponsor, who is pro-choice, after this came out and said, "I'm new to the House. I'm new to this process. I am a co-sponsor of this. I apologize. I did not read this carefully enough. I went back and read it. It is way beyond anything that I was talking about. I want nothing to do with it," and withdrew her sponsorship.
Yeah. Well, because the clip you just played, it's my read on that was you can have a late-term abortion if a doctor certifies that it will have some sort of mental effect on you. which is to say, if you're going to be stressed, sad, and like a somewhat subjective state, as opposed to your life is in danger or the child is non-viable.
Correct. That's not what we're talking about here. Yeah. We're talking about postpartum blues.
Yeah, which at that point is basically an elective third trimester abortion, which, by the way, I would be against.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah. So it's if because we have been safe, rare, safe, rare, and what was the third one? I can't remember now. But we were there. And that was, we're just trying to make sure that, you know, it's safe and it's rare because it's going to happen. We don't want it back alleys. That's no longer it. And now we have Virginia. We have it passed in New York. This, what she's talking about, has passed in New York. You have Vermont and I think Rhode Island going for the same thing now. So all of a sudden we've hit not a slippery slope. It's been a slippery slope, and that's what people have said. It's a slippery slope. It's going to get, you know, further and further the other way. Slippery slope, slippery slope. And they've always said, it's not a slippery slope. No, you're right. It's not. It's a cliff. This hasn't been. All of a sudden, we have this law that is that insane that you can say, you know what, I don't want, for familial reasons, is in the New York law. Mm-hmm. For familial reasons, my husband is gone, or I don't have a babysitter because my mom can't help out. Any reason at all is okay in the New York law. We're not even close as a people to that. And I will tell you that it is clarified. The Paulina, the woman in Poland who was a righteous among the nations, who told me at a time, and it didn't. It's becoming more and more clear to me what this means. Glenn, you're looking at this wrong. The righteous, the people who saved the Jews, they didn't suddenly become righteous. They just refused to go over the cliff with the rest of humanity. You don't expect a society to all of a sudden just drop off a cliff. But that is it. That's it. This is not a slippery slope. This is not a gradual decline. This is a cliff. And we're all looking at it and we're all going, well, I'm not for that. I'm not for that. But other people have already gone off that cliff. And by refusing to say, that's a cliff you're going off, by saying, no, that's not what it means, by defending it in any way, you've gone off the cliff.
Couple of follow-ups?
Yes.
So with the Virginia bill,
which, by the way, failed now. Now that the co-sponsor came out, it
failed.
Well,
it was going to fail anyway. I mean, it had like two supporters in the Senate. Mm-hmm. It really wasn't. And that particular bill, in some variation, I think, has been happening the last 10 years. That's been a perennial thing, and there's always somebody that's writing bills about various pet projects. This is one of them. It just happened to catch media attention this time.
Because it passed in New York.
Yeah, could be, yeah. Okay. So my takeaway when I was reading it, or I didn't read the full bill, but reading synopses of it from various websites, mm-hmm. the main thing to me seemed to be that it would take away the Virginia law requiring an ultrasound if you were going to get an abortion, and it would also take away the rule that as of now you can get a abortion in the event that it is going to have it's a health risk, mm-hmm. but you have to have three doctors do it, and it would limit it down to one.
One.
So that seemed to me to be the meat of the bill, mm-hmm. and there is either a sneaker clause put in, or there's an ambiguous clause that was inadvertently put in. One of those two things when we get into the issue of mental health, right? Mm-hmm. But the big point of it seemed to be those two thrusts. What do you think about those two elements of it?
I don't like the idea that it's reduced from one to three. Even in Nazi Germany, the T4 program had to have three signatures. Three doctors had to agree that life is not worth living. Three. We're now saying, we're good with one.
If there were a law requiring you to name the child you would have had, and I wanted to scrap that law, would you be in favor of getting rid of that law?
I don't think I understand that law.
Well, I mean, like a lot of these regulations, I think they're not designed around protecting anyone's life. They're bureaucratic hurdles that have been put in to try and staunch the amount of abortions happening. So that's a lot of the strategy, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if there's any type of regulatory hurdle you can put in to try and make abortions more difficult, are you in favor of those unilaterally, or is it specifically?
No, I prefer. I mean, if I'm dealing with unfair people on the other side, I do try to block them any way I can. If I could have closed down a camp with bureaucratic nonsense in Nazi Germany, I absolutely would. But I prefer to do it the right way.
And I'll say, even me as a libertarian would be willing to yeah. increase bureaucracy to stop yeah. concentration camps.
Right.
If I could make some more red tape for concentration camps, I'd probably get behind that.
Right. If you believe that it is murder, which I do, especially what they're talking about, absolutely. I will resort to anything that I have to. But I prefer that the rest of the human race goes, hey, that's murder. We just shouldn't do that. All right. Back in just a second. First, let me tell you about realestateagentsitrust.com. This is something that has been a huge success. And the reason why is because I do a lot of work with real estate agents all over the country on something else that I do. I represent a lot of these real estate agents. So I've met the ones that are on the Wall Street Journal, they'll say the best 500 real estate agents in the country. I know a lot of those guys, and I've met them, and I've talked to them, and I've talked to them out of frustration. When I can't sell my house, I'm like, what is my real estate agent? What's wrong? What are we doing? And I've learned a lot. And so we know how to pick the agent that will sell your home. And so what we started was not a real estate agency, but it's almost like a match.com for the buyer or the seller and the right real estate agent. And they're the people that have your values and know how to price and sell your house or help you buy a new house. A lot of people write to us and say they found that, like, it's like a new friend that they found, and the results are overwhelming. They are so positive. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. If you're looking to buy or sell your house and you want to do it quickly and get the most amount of money out of your house and get the least amount of money into the next one, it's RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. For anybody who worries about weapons of mass destruction coming across the border, yesterday they stopped a truck. Inside was a weapon of mass destruction that could kill 57 million Americans. I'll give you the details when we come back.
The fusion of entertainment and enlightenment. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Yesterday at the border, a weapon of mass destruction was found on a truck coming across the border. Could have killed 57 million Americans. I'll tell you all about it in 1 minute.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Let me tell you about 23andMe, and then we're right back into the program. Yesterday, I had a really amazing call, and I haven't heard the details of it because we ran out of time, and so the producers had to take the rest of it. But a guy called me and said, hey, 23andMe, we just did it, and we think we have found our lost cousin who was somehow or another taken from the family, and they think that they have found him now through DNA testing. And he's like, we have to hire an attorney. And he said, the crazy thing is, Glenn, we think he's related to you. And I'm like, well, is he crazy? And because if he is, yes, good chance. If you're using 23andMe to try to find connections to me, it's don't do it. I mean, I've got enough insane relatives. I don't want any more. I mean, when the holidays come, I look at the family at the door and I'm so excited until I actually open it. And then I'm like, ick, not this family. I want the family in the magazines and on TV, not this family.
For that, you can rent a Hallmark family.
There is a service you can rent.
I'm forming a service.
Okay. All right. So anyway, 23andMe, the health and ancestry kit. I've just taken this and I will know if that kid is related to me. They have this new thing where you can find the people who are in your family tree and you can, you know, contact them if they opt in. I'm opting in because I just want to call people that I think, you know, any relative of mine that lives like in New York or California, I want to know. Because I'm going to call
him. I so hope it turns out you're like cousins with Paul Krugman or something?
Oh my gosh, would that be great?
You have to call him and go, hey, guess what? Turns out we're related.
Hey, let's have a family reunion. Anyway, the Ancestry Kit also teaches you about your health, your traits, and more than 125 personal insights. It is 23andme.com. And is it slash Beck? Yeah. 23andme.com/Beck. Get the kit. Take it with me. 23andme.com/Beck. The secure DNA testing kit, 23andme.com/Beck. Okay, here's this is an amazing story. According to U.S. Customs and Border Protection, yesterday, a cucumber truck.
I already hate this story, Glenn.
Bringing in cucumbers?
Yeah. We got enough. Thank you.
Are you, by any chance, do you hate, Andrew Heaton is joining me today, do you hate salads as much as I do?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And cucumbers just suck the flavor out of everything. And I had to grow up dealing with them a lot because, Dad, it's easy to grow cucumbers. So, like, rather than growing, like, delicious, like, you grow tomatoes, pretty good tomatoes, but you grow these massive cucumbers, and we'd leave them, we'd go to our neighbor's houses, we'd pass them out, oh, thank you. Then the following day, we'd come back, we'd got more cucumbers, and, like, we don't need them. And so we would spend the evening putting them on the door like an orphan, and ringing the doorbell and running away. So I associate cucumbers with unnecessary labor and lack of flavor.
Right, okay, so you spend time in England.
Yeah.
Is a cucumber sandwich really just bread with cucumbers on it?
Yeah, I think that there's butter or something. That's pretty good.
That's a horrible sandwich.
No, by English standards, though, that's pretty good. Because like Scottish cuisine is just basically carnival food with sheep in it.
Right.
Like take a deep fat fried, like deep fried Mars bar and a deep fried sheep. English food is just boiled. And so the cucumber sandwich, once you're over there, you're like, oh, that sounds pretty good, actually. You're going to put a dead fish in a newspaper with some overcooked French fries? I'll eat the cucumber sandwich.
Okay, all right. Okay, I look at it. Anyway, so this cucumber truck is coming across the border, and the canines go crazy, and they find what I would describe as a weapon of mass destruction. They find 254 pounds of fentanyl.
And that's a lot of fentanyl.
It's enough fentanyl. If you have prescription from a doctor, fentanyl is an end-of-life hospice-only drug, okay? It is only given out in the most significant and end-of-life scenarios. Or in my case, they gave it to me because no drugs work on me.
Or your doctors didn't like you.
That's a very good possibility. Yeah. It was up in the Northeast. I had a fentanyl patch for 3 days, and I took it off in the middle of the night because I didn't even know what it was. I'd never even heard of fentanyl. But I knew whatever that was is going to kill me. Took it off and then read the box the next day. This is how powerful fentanyl is. Think of a fentanyl patch as like, you know, one of those big Band-Aid butterfly bandages that are kind of, you know, like an inch and a half.
I get into a lot of bar fights, so I'm familiar with the concept. Yeah.
All right. So think of it, a fentanyl patch about like that. Okay. And it just has some fentanyl on the pad. That's what you put on. And if you put it on without rubber gloves, and you touch it with one hand and then touch it with another hand, you could get a double dose of it and it can kill you. Okay.
Okay.
That's how powerful this is.
So like on a scale of like Advil to fentanyl, fentanyl's like at least three times as powerful as Advil.
Yeah.
Okay.
This seems like the directions very carefully.
Okay, cool. Okay.
So 254 pounds. To put this into perspective, 254 pounds of fentanyl is enough for 57 million Americans to overdose and die on.
Okay.
254 pounds of fentanyl. 57 million Americans could be dead from that. That is a weapon of mass destruction, is it not?
Yes. I mean, presumably they weren't trying to weaponize it, right?
Well, no, they were not trying to weaponize
or,
it.
Or maybe they were going to Canada. Maybe they were just passing through.
Yeah. May I make this case?
Okay.
Are you familiar with the opium wars?
England and China.
Tell me what you know about the opium wars, because I knew nothing about it. So if you don't know anything about it,
sure,
that's fine. But tell me what you think you know about the opium wars.
So the British Empire was helpfully going around the world, organizing people's things for them and building railroads and infrastructure.
Sure.
And they happened to make a stop off in China. And I think the Chinese basically were like, hey, quit selling us opium. And the British were like, no, we're going to keep selling you opium. So they went to war with them to force the Chinese to buy their opium.
Okay.
That's my vague recollection from when I was in England.
Kind of.
I think that's how they explained it to me.
Kind of. That is like saying the founding fathers all got together and said, we want to be able to not have tea time anymore, and so they founded Canada.
Yeah.
You're close.
Okay.
But not exactly. I'm in the ballpark. So here's what the opium wars were. There was a blockade on China, and there was a trade war going on between China and England. I'm going to butcher this. So I am also kind of, it ends up with the Declaration of Independence being signed in Montreal. But,
right. Yeah, yeah.
But I'm closer. Maybe it was signed at Niagara Falls. I guess
the Declaration of Independence would be so much more pretentious if it had been signed in Montreal. It would be terrible. There'd be lots of French in it.
Right.
It'd be awful.
Yeah. It would have been in two languages.
Yeah. We would not have gotten very far.
Anyway. You are not good for my ADD, man. So what happened is there was trade war. England needed to break it up. And so what they did is they went to India and said, sell us opium. So the Indians sold the opium to the British, who then took it to the border of China. And the Chinese people wanted the opium.
Yeah.
Why were we selling the opium? Why was England selling the opium to the Chinese? Because they knew they could get them addicted and it would weaken them.
Oh.
So the Chinese were fighting back because this
makes me rethink the British Empire. It doesn't seem like they're just helpfully building telegraph lines everywhere.
No. And so that's what the war was over. They said, stop bringing this illegally across our border and selling it to our people. Well, isn't that what Mexico is doing to us?
I mean, is the state of Mexico doing it, or are there narco-traffickers doing it?
The narco-traffickers.
Okay.
However, if you heard about the border, remember, what did they say when Donald Trump said, all this fentanyl, all these opioids are coming across the border? What did they say?
Very orange.
We don't get much opioid. We don't get much fentanyl. We don't get that. First of all, most of it doesn't come across the border. It comes into our ports from Mexico. But the biggest importer is China. So China is now making opioids and fentanyl and doing what the English did to us.
We're not even the same country anymore. We broke up with them, China. You should send it to England. That's fair. I mean, that's how history works.
But hold on, with
the fentanyl, though, did it come through? Was this stopped at a checkpoint? Were they trying, like,
cause, no, it was a checkpoint.
Because then that would not really deal with the wall, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. This did go over a checkpoint.
Yeah.
But what I find interesting is if that's coming over a checkpoint, how much is coming over elsewhere? Because you wouldn't think you'd be 254 pounds of fentanyl in a cucumber truck. That's worth a lot of money. I don't think I'm bringing it across the border. I think I would try to get that across the border, not in a cucumber truck.
Yeah, that was your move right there. No one in America is going to welcome a cucumber truck coming in.
Right. We're going to
put it in an empanada truck. I would have waved you through. Thanks, guys. Come on in.
All right. Our sponsor is Liberty Safe. Liberty Safes are great, and they're great for more than just your guns and ammo. I mean, that's what I store in my safes. And I do have more than one safe, because what happened is I bought a safe and it was a smaller one, And I thought, no, I'm just going to put my rifles and my guns in there. And then I realized that's not enough room. So I had to buy another small one.
Okay.
And I bought another small one. And now they're both so full that I cannot close them. Buy a big one.
I just keep them in my umbrella stand. Should I get a safe?
I would say, yeah.
Okay.
And I question you for having an umbrella stand as a...
I'm tidy.
As a straight 30-year-old single male.
Thank you. 35. Thank you.
35. I don't understand the umbrella stand.
Well, it's an umbrella stand and a rifle stand. So it's, you know, right. It's multi-use.
So it's okay. Yeah. All right. Okay.
But you get those confused. That's a bad day.
Yeah.
You don't want to go out there and try to open up your umbrella and just indiscriminately fire into the sky.
Okay. Anyway, Liberty Safes are the best built safes on the planet, bar none. And their engineers have developed the newest revolution in home safes. It's a military style locking bar. I have one. This is a sweet safe. Go to Liberty Safe and just check it out. But please, the number one complaint on Liberty, this is honest to God true. The number one thing that customers complain about is their choice. They say, I should have bought a bigger one. Liberty Safe. Check them out now. Best built safe on the planet, bar none. It is LibertySafe.com. That's LibertySafe.com. 10 seconds, station ID. You know, I have to play Ashton Kutcher and his response on pro-life, being pro-life. I haven't heard this yet, but this was probably the biggest video in America yesterday when it comes to politics. Here's Ashton Kutcher. Oh, you don't have it? Oh, I thought I sent it in earlier today. Well, see if you can get it, because I want to play it once before we leave. So maybe we can do that at the end of the hour. I've got a lot of stuff because Monday we're doing a show on abortions.
Mm.
So I have a lot of stuff on colonial American abortions, which is only interesting to really people like you and me.
I was about to say, I'm intrigued by that because kind of what we designate is moral and immoral, what we designate as legal and illegal, those change over time. And I'm curious to what colonial Americans thought.
Colonial Americans thought that, colonial Americans thought that abortion after what was called the quickening,
which is in the Highlander, that's when all the immortals come together.
Yeah, no, that's
way late. That's like 18 term abortion.
Right?
That's terrible.
Yeah, no, that's not it. Quickening is when you can feel the baby move inside of a woman.
Yeah.
But it was interesting. The first abortion trial happened under John Smith. Remember John Smith and Pocahontas?
Mm-hmm.
So the first one happened with John Smith, and he had to decide the innocence or guilt of this individual. And it was, let me see if I can find it. The deposition came in from Dorcas Howard.
Oh, poor Dorcas Howard. Whoever this person is, I feel sorry for him. I don't imagine that had an easy childhood.
Yeah, no, it was a woman, too.
Dorcas.
Oh. You're like, oh.
What are you guys doing? Just go with Susan. Yeah. Susan's a fine name.
Susan Dorcas. So anyway, she was an unmarried servant. And the thing I found in the research yesterday was that most of the women that had abortions, not all, but most of the women who had abortions were servants in the house. They were white, but they were servants in the house. And because, you know, not slave servants, but what do you call
indentured
it?
Servants.
Indentured servants. Mm-hmm. So they would get together, and Miss Howard was an unmarried servant. And she was arrested after she gave birth in secret to a son. And what she did was really quite horrible to this kid. But the people that went to jail, according to John Smith's decision, was not only for her, but the guy who fathered the child also went to jail. And then there's a few things. One woman was executed because she killed her child. Most of them really happened when it was a man raping or taking a servant and having his way, and then they couldn't get married. But what was interesting to me was a lot of them went to trial, and they were both punished for whatever, and then they ended up marrying each other. Like three of them.
The crisis brought them together emotionally.
I don't.
Like, this has been tough. We have to wear these scarlet letters.
I really
have got to know you a lot better, Dorcas. Let's get hitched.
I don't know. But what was interesting to me also was that it wasn't just on the women. You think, oh, well, it was just the women. No. A lot of times the women, now remember, we're talking 1600s, the women were whipped and the men were whipped for adultery. But it was the man who ended up serving the time or getting the punishment for the abortion.
Wait, so would they? Was it permissible to get an abortion if it was out of wedlock? Is that what I'm getting? Or is
no,
it,
no,
they,
no.
they would try and do it, and the colonials would go, "You can't do that.
You can't do that.
Gotcha.
I don't care if you're
okay.
married or not married.
Gotcha.
You
okay.
can't kill your child."
Yeah. Hmm.
And so that's where they were. And it looks like, I mean, maybe we can just go, you know, back to I have a warrant for the arrest of a woman named Anna Trasko, I think. I can't remember her last name. But a woman, she was in Salem, and mm-hmm. she was part of the Salem witch trials. And she was a witch because she became pregnant without the help of a man.
Oh, wait, was that her? That was yeah. her. Oh, I'm going to get in trouble yeah. for this. What am I going to claim? I'll just say I'm a witch.
Yeah.
And that no one will think I'm a hussy.
Is that crazy?
And that it backfired. Is that how that started?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we all know that's how all babies without a husband. Witchcraft.
I used to live in Scotland, and there's if you go to the Castle Esplanade, there's this placard that it's dedicated to witches that were burned in because the Scots didn't have miniature golf or TV or anything, so they needed hobbies.
Right.
So they burn witches.
Right.
And there's this placard that says, you know, many of the women that were burned here were not bad witches, but good witches. And I'm like, none of them were witches. What's wrong with you? None of these people were witches. And the placards were like 1980. They put up,
wow.
like, who was in charge of this? Oh, and the Scots, if you were a witch, they would, throw you on trial, but they throw you into Norlock, which was the septic drainage ditch next to the castle. And if you sank, which was unlikely with the way sewage works, that meant you were fine. And they'd write an apologetic letter to your family. If you didn't sink because of, you know, were buoyant, that meant the devil was underneath you holding you up, mm-hmm. which point they'd burn you at the stake. And this is the nasty part. This is the Scottish bit. They would charge your family for the firewood bill just to like really stick it to you.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Was it a chance you were raised a witch?
I mean, it's
by your family?
Fully possible. Yeah, I could see that. No, I think I'm descended pretty much entirely from rodeo clowns and horse thieves. I don't think
yeah.
we have any witchcraft in the family.
Yeah, I didn't mean you personally. I didn't know. I mean, because as we learned from the documentary in the 1960s, Bewitched,
yeah.
It runs in the family.
That's true.
So
could be. I'm going to have to check with my mom on that.
Yeah.
But I think we're okay there. Yeah, they all sorts of weird witchcraft thing in history that were, and it seems to be a recurring thing. Like there seems to be an instinct for human beings to go witch. You know, in England, I learned this recently. Witchcraft was not considered necessarily satanic up until maybe 1700. So if you go back to if you're time traveling and you go back to like 1480 England,
mm-hmm.
like there's witchcraft, but it's almost seen as like a like kind of like the evil eye. Where it's mm-hmm. like almost like a magical skill mm-hmm. you possess, but it's mm-hmm. not necessarily with the dark arts.
So I almost bought this piece, and it's the one thing I regret that I was offered in. It's a historic piece that I didn't buy. It was too expensive at the time, and now I'd do anything to get it. It was a bowl, a magic bowl, that the Jewish society back in the times of Jesus would put at, they'd turn it over, and they'd put it underneath their doorstep if they believed in sorcery and things like that. And on this was written about the sorcerer Jesus from Nazareth, who worked all kinds of miracles. And it was something that tribe associated Jesus as a sorcerer, not son of God, as some sort of magician.
You're listening to Glenn Beck.
All right. Relationship. Tip number one, I can just teach Andrew this because, he's 35 and still single.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's Star Trek.
Odd
but
fluke.
Anyway, odd fluke? No.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
I've taken dates to Star Trek conventions, Glenn. I'm on top of this.
Sure, sure. So anyway, Valentine's Day. Do not fall for the, we don't have to celebrate Valentine's Day this year. As they said in Star Wars, It's a trap. It's absolutely a trap. You've got to have flowers or roses or something. 1-800-Flowers.com. Get them now. A dozen assorted roses for $19.99, or you can upgrade to 2 dozen assorted roses for $10 more. Great offer from 1-800-Flowers.com, but it expires today, so you got to do it now. 1-800-Flowers.com. 1-800-Flowers.com. Use the radio code Beck. I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. next week for our Tuesday coverage of the State of the Union. You'll see it beginning on Tuesday, 7:30 Eastern, Facebook, YouTube, and blazetv.com. This is the Glenn Beck Program. Our State of the Union coverage on Tuesday at 7:30 Eastern comes from New York and Dallas. And we have all kinds of great coverage, and it'll be different coverage, I'm thinking, because you strangely are helping in the coverage. Well, are you?
I am. I think, as you know, I am now the junior assistant Washington correspondent. So it's weird that you guys specified. I'm literally below anyone that works for the Blaze in D.C. I am the lowest ranking member. However, you did give me a microphone and a camera.
Right.
And right. I went out there and I gave it the old college try. And there are a lot of things at the State of the Union address that I feel I am able to see that you guys aren't. Like,
right.
Did you know in the last State of the Union address that Justin Amash kept throwing Twinkies up into the gallery? Well, that's the kind of stuff I'm looking for.
I did not know that.
It may or may not be true, but I'm pretty sure
right.
it is. And I'm going to say that it's true.
And you actually, I've seen the photographic evidence, strangely, that the members, I don't know if they're members of Congress or they were just strangely there somehow, but the there were some people sitting in the seats of in Congress that would not stand for the president, and that was...
This is something that I can't countenance. I try and be fairly forgiving, Glenn, as you know, with politics. But, you know, when the president stands up and says American sandwiches are some of the best things in the world, and everybody stands, Democrats, Republicans stand up, and you know who's not standing up? Bears. Congressional bears just hanging out, just giving these weak, limp-wristed clapping like a golf clap. I'm so unimpressed.
And you're going to bring that to our coverage.
Yeah. That's the kind of stuff you can expect from me commenting on the State of the Union address.
Not what you'll expect from the Washington, D.C. Bureau, which will bring you non-bear coverage.
No, they're all fixated on what the president says and what it means and all that kind of stuff. I'm keeping my eyes on my eyes are on the ball.
So very, very different coverage on the blazetv.com/Beck. Go there now. You'll be able to see this. It's, I believe, commercial free, and it is going to be happening, you know, all night, and you'll be able to watch it on YouTube, on our Facebook page at Blaze TV. And you'll also, as a subscriber, be able to get it as well. I'm actually going this year. I have avoided it like the plague. I have been invited every year to go, and I've never taken them up on it.
But I wouldn't think that you would really like the idea of the State of the Union address, right?
I hate the State of the Union.
Because you're more of, I get the impression you're more of a Jeffersonian than a Woodrow Wilson devotee.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I get that impression from you.
So I don't like it. I don't like the pomp and circumstance. I don't like the, you know, Mr. Speaker. I hate that. I hate that.
Do you know how to do it in the House of Lords with the Queen? Have you ever looked into this? Because that's what we're doing, by the way, is we're doing the royal address to the House of Lords.
We now have royalty.
Yeah, it's the imperial presidency. I like the British version because I think it's very healthy to have the head of state not have power. I like separating reverence from power. So I think the British have figured that out pretty well. And I think we should make Betty White or Kelsey Grammer the monarch of America, and just not leave him any power. What the queen does is this is part of the whole thing. The queen has a royal hostage during her parliament address every year that just hangs out at Buckingham Palace. That way, if parliament captures the queen, they can murder that member of parliament. She goes to the house. Well, that used to be how it was, right?
Really?
Literally, because after the Glorious Revolution, there's this power dynamic shift where it used to be, you know, the king could dismiss parliament and that kind of stuff. And now parliament's like, no, at the end of the day, we can and will kill you. In fact, they keep the death warrant for Charles the First in the dressing room the queen hangs out in before she addresses parliament. That's always there. It's the original death warrant, just to remind whoever the queen is at the time that we have and will kill again if you really cross us.
Holy cow.
And she has the hostage. She comes to parliament. And there's this ceremony where she walks over to the House of Commons and prepares to enter it. They have to slam the door in her face. Like, that's part of the pomp, is you are not a member of the House of Commons. You're a lord. You cannot enter this. You can't pass this threshold, which is why they do it in the House of Lords. And then she, you know, reads a prepared speech or whatever, and then they all eat cucumber sandwiches.
That is insane.
Yeah. But again, she doesn't have any power, which is why I'm fine with that. Like, if you just want to
I'm not, because then what are you paying for?
I think that we have, as human beings, we have this weird fixation where we want to have social betters, and then we crave their approval. And I'm not sure we can get rid of that. So I just want to funnel it into something that is not, it doesn't have actual power. If the Queen could also set the tax rate, I would abhor that, and I would be an English Republican. But as it is, I think it's cute to have ceremonial monarchs.
Right. Okay. But she's been a good queen.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's gonna, when Charles comes in.
Yeah.
I think everybody's gonna look at their checkbook and go, what the hell do we have this guy around for?
I don't think they'll. Yeah, that could be. You know, and actually, if he becomes king, I think Australia might very well become a republic. It's, if you talk to Australians about this, they're like, we'll become a republic if Charles. I can't do an Australian accent. Yeah. If Charles comes in, we'll be a republic. But if they skip Charles and go straight to William, they'll stay a monarchy.
All right,
which is a weird thing to me.
Is exactly what I think the Queen is hoping. The Queen has only been hanging on because she's like, I've got this son. I don't even think he's mine. I swear I don't remember his birth.
So she wakes up, everybody goes, is Charles alive?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, I must carry on with this tired world.
Right. That's what she's doing. You know,
she's got a big bucket of fentanyl next to her bed.
She would have been dead 20 years ago if her son wasn't Charles.
Did you read about Prince Philip flipped a car 2 weeks ago?
No.
That's the Queen's husband. Prince Philip, 97 years old, and he flipped his Land Rover, which, well done. But also, why is he driving at all? Shouldn't he have a chauffeur? Like, get on this, England. Get some crowdsourcing done.
Well, we took the keys away from my grandfather.
Yeah.
I mean, somebody should take the keys away from Philip.
I was talking to my dad a year or two ago, and he was describing his grandmother, my great-great-grandmother, Grandma Bickle. And he's like, oh, she was a tough old bird, Grandma Bickle. I mean, she would, you know, she went blind at 92, quit driving at 94, fixture of the town. And I was like, wait, what? What was the chronology of that? And like, apparently Grandma Bickle, like, just she memorized all the turns to get to the grocery store and refused to quit driving after she went functionally blind. And they would, I guess, the town people in Alva, Oklahoma would just come out and be like, Ethel's driving. And everyone would scatter and go back into their houses. So I assume that's what they're doing with Philip.
Well, it could be.
Yeah.
Could be. I don't think he's probably out on the roads.
Which, if I could plug it, Chad Prather, beloved funny man here at The Blaze now, he came on last week. We did a full episode of my podcast that was a biopic of Prince Philip. So it's just an hour of me talking to the opposite of Prince Philip, which is Chad Prather.
Right.
The opposite of British aristocracy, about how it works. It was a fun episode.
So I know somebody who has met Prince Philip before.
Yeah.
And it was in a military setting. And Prince Philip came up, and it was, I don't even know what they have, you know, I don't know, Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts is their army. Who knows?
Yeah.
Blue, in fact. Right. And so, you know, the Boy Scouts they're probably more like Cub Scouts, and the Girl Scouts were there. And Prince Philip said, what do you do? And he said to the woman, and she said, well, I'm a physician. And he honestly said, he drew back and said, good God, we do not have women doctors in this country now, do we?
And this was like, what, last April?
Yeah, it was like 2 years ago, 5 years ago.
This is what crazy. What people don't understand about Prince Philip, he was born in like 1937.
Yeah.
No, not earlier than that, because he served in World War II. So I'm sure he was born in like 1917 or something.
Yeah.
Coming up on it, actually, like 1921. Imagine if you are already a British cartoon character version of a rich person, and then you marry the Queen, and no one ever expects you to change for the rest of your life. And so you're a cartoon character in 1945, and that's it. He's a time capsule from 1945.
He really is, because nobody's going
to
tell him.
No, and that's why whenever he goes to countries, like, he went to Barbados and just opened up with, you're all descended from pirates, yes? Like, that was his opening line going to Barbados, was to insult the entire people.
Wouldn't it be great, though, to be like that?
Oh, that'd be,
to be able to be that way.
To just,
I don't care.
Yeah. What did I say? You're aware that I'm sleeping with the Queen, right? I can say whatever I want. Yes. I don't care. I'm going to die probably in the next 2 years.
I think that's what we have in Donald Trump.
I think
we
we
have like a Prince Philip that doesn't care. He doesn't care. He's not royalty, but kind of. I mean, he sits in gold chairs a lot. You know,
he's doing. Yeah, he sits in gold chairs. He's got the imperial presidency. He's already there for him. And you're right. I don't think he cares that much.
I don't think he cares. Yeah. I don't think he cares at all. So anyway, he's going to get up at the State of the Union, and it should be interesting to watch. I'm going, and we'll be covering it live from Washington D.C.
Are you going to bring like a bingo card that you make in advance of things he might say, and like play with other people in the
gallery? You know, we might want
you
to
should
do
pass
a bingo.
Them out.
We should.
I will say that would be a very surreal moment for anyone in the gallery of like, did Glenn Beck just pass you a bingo card?
Right,
and it says like America's great, the wall, things like that.
Right. Yeah. What will be really surreal is if you're watching at home on Tuesday and you hear somebody from the gallery go bingo. That will,
Glenn, I will give you $50 if you yell "Play Freebird" when the president stands
up. I don't think so. All right, we're so glad that you're listening. Let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It is My Patriot Supply.
Oh, okay.
My Patriot Supply they're the people that will help you be prepared. You just bought some.
I have a bug out bag at home. That's also, it's like my bug out bag. It's also my camping equipment. But I went ahead and bought a week's supply of food. For My Patriot Supply. I got it last week and put it in there.
You actually do have a bug out bag.
I had a bug out bag. Now it's like a proper like hiking bag, but I'm good to go. Like I'm fine. I'm fine for 2 weeks if the grid shuts down. I'm on top of things.
Something like that, like an EMP, certainly not going to last more than 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think we'd all tie. FEMA would be on top of stuff, and they're like, guys, like try and make macaroni for a couple of weeks. We'll get things back online.
No, it's going to be fine after 2 weeks. Anyway, there's 4 week food kit now where you can actually save $100, but you have to do it today. All right, it averages 2,000 calories a day for anybody who's eating it. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. That's what you need to be able to stay healthy. It's 25 years in storage. Have you eaten any of it?
I haven't eaten any of it yet.
Okay.
I'm going to try it out to see what it's like.
You're a bachelor, and I know it just as a married man, my wife has gone away on weekends, and I've you know, kind of prowled around for something easy, and I would say, if I wouldn't get in trouble, that somebody has been dipping into the My Patriot Supply food. Hmm. So not all of the kits are complete at this point.
Are you keeping, when the grid goes down, are you going to like suddenly find out that you've been, you know, double timing macaroni?
No, I'm
you're covered. You're okay.
Not, no, not me. I'm not going to, but I certainly will talk to my son about him going into that food supply when the wife was, his mom was gone, because that's the way it. Anyway, you go to preparewithglenn.com right now. Preparewithglenn.com and prepare yourself with My Patriot Supply. This special, I believe, ends today. It's a 4 week supply. You get $100 off. It is really good food. It's healthy, 2,000 calories a day, and you will be prepared for 4 weeks. My Patriot Supply. It's preparewithglenn.com or call 800-271-63. 800-271-63. Preparewithglenn.com. Do you remember when Howard Schultz from Starbucks was considered a liberal Democrat, favored by people on the left, which apparently all changed about 4 days ago when he decided to come out and say, hey, I think you guys are a little bit extreme. And then they all hated him.
How dare you? Yeah, it was interesting watching the coverage of that, because the reaction was immediate and visceral and widespread. And it was, how dare you? You're a billionaire, so that's terrible. Also, your ideas are awful, and you're greedy, and we don't like you, and we would never vote for you. But more importantly, how dare you not run as a Democrat? That seems odd to me that you're... But there's this sort of entitlement idea of like, well, we get to coronate someone, and the Republicans get to coronate someone, and that's it. And like, I don't like looking at the parties as these quasi-government appendages. You don't have to run as part of them if you don't want to. You can maybe have more than one of two ideas. That's a possible thing.
But what's strange to me is how far left this should speak volumes to the average Democrat, because I think there are the New York and California Democrats in the parties and the Washington Democrat. But then there's the, you know, I don't know, Kansas Democrat.
But say, I was an Oklahoma Democrat for a while, and that's functionally a third party at this point.
Like,
it's
right,
not,
it is.
You know, it's not the same thing as a Sacramento Democrat.
No, even Howard Schultz would have been too liberal for that Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm.
And now he is... He's not welcome at all. He's considered, what, a conservative?
Yeah.
And I think he would have a better chance of uniting the real Democratic voters than any of these crazies that they're running.
I think you're right about that. I mean, she's not eligible to run, but were it Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez versus Howard Schultz, I think Howard Schultz would she would have a much more excited and an angry base,
mm-hmm.
he would have a much whiter base were he able to get the nomination.
Yeah.
But as you pointed out, he is drifting dangerously into math. And that is not something that is particularly accepted or well-liked right now in Democratic circles.
Right. But Ocasio-Cortez is, I think, a gift to conservatives all around the country.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, because it's... Well,
She is such an easy target for comedy. She'd be easy Sarah Palin material on Saturday Night Live if she was on the other side.
That's true. She's not a policy heavyweight. But I'll tell you why I'm worried about her, though, is I think she's doing something that's very clever, which is with the 70% tax rate,
mm-hmm.
she knows that's not going to happen. What she's doing is she's shifting the Overton window on the whole debate, and it's already happening. You can watch mm-hmm. this if you watch CNN or you watch some other media programs where they're like, now, is 70 really that high? What if we did, 60%? And I'm like, I see what you did there. You just mm-hmm. nudged the whole conversation about mm-hmm. 40% higher than I'd like it to be.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
That's
actually
about
more than that.
70.
It's about 37 right now. Is that the top marginal tax?
Yeah, I think it's about 70% higher than I'd like it to be.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just me. I mean,
I want a boutique government. This is the new term I'm trying out, Glenn, because the small government that summons these various things, boutique government that I can fit in my glove compartment. That's what I want.
Yes, I would agree with that. The problem here is that's not the way our country is headed, at least with the Democrats. And I think, while Ocasio-Cortez may be the Overton window mover now, I think she's a serious player for many
You're listening
in the party.
To Glenn Beck.